Tuesday, November 18th, 1986. A group met at Hartzell's house to review plans for taping oral interviews to be used later on in doing a history of Stony Brook University. The group consisted of Sidney Gelber, former academic vice president, Tom Irvine, former dean of the College of Engineering, Francis Bunner, former chairman of the Department of Chemistry, and Clifford Swartz of the Physics Department, former editor of the Physics Teacher.
Dean, you know, the whole system getting its way, getting into the papers, and that was quite remarkable. That was the first of its kind.
If the real history workshop, if the real history is accurately written, nobody will believe it.
I know. That's you know, when they first gathered together a committee, when Robert called some of us together about getting about a year ago or something, and
just as after Francis, I said, "Oh, you want to write a history?"
I said, "If you're going to write a history, and if you really get down the facts as they occur," I said, "No one's going to believe it." So we do have a problem of credibility.
Credibility, right? There's a lot of stuff in that. The old newspapers.
Oh, yeah.
Something was accurate, something was inaccurate.
But there was a lot of stuff.
Yeah, the Times and Newsday.
Newsday, there was that fellow Carroll who later on got a lot of fancy clothes. And I really was curious.
What was his name? Marty?
No, Robert Carroll.
Oh, Robert Carroll.
And he came, everything was hitting
his fan. Clark Buskin there?
No, not those days. He came later. Buskin may have been the education, but he didn't get involved in something.
This guy had a systematic bias.
Oh, yes.
He was incredible.
And I was...
It was as though he was really out to destroy the college.
There's no question. I felt that. So I said to him once that I thought that he was doing us a disservice. He said, "Well, look, I'm willing to write a better story, but I need background. No one's giving me this." I said, "Well, all right, if you get background." Well, for about 3.5 years after that, we were threatening to sue me.
He put everything in the newspapers.
And I named names and everything. I called a friend of mine, who was a lawyer, just in case. I mean, it was really dirty cool. And he put it in such a context, as though this was Sal Grape's type of thing. I said, but
someone that was helpful to us was Fred Eckert.
Oh, no question.
There was a crucial moment in which I said something to him, and he said, "Do you mind if I attribute you directly?" And that's a very good thing.
And I thought about it, and I said, "Why not?"
When was this?
Well, it was 1960. John Lee was fired. I can almost pinpoint it because I was in South America when the whole thing blew up.
Yeah.
I was sitting in my office one morning, and the phone rang. And he said, "Would you like to make a statement about the fact that the president was fired?" I said, "What?" At first I heard of it. He was fired by the trustees, and the Times got a hold of it somehow.
Yeah, well, I drove up with
him. It was on the front page of the Times.
Yeah.
Well, I drove up with him
to Albany.
It was a day or two before.
With Heckinger? No, with John Lee.
October.
And he, we went up. And he went, I waited for him outside, and they had called him in,
Hamilton.
And someone from the board, I guess it was the, he was that time secretary of the board.
So, police from Buffalo.
Murray. And, they had a letter all set to sign. And he looked and said, "Absolutely not." He said, "If you want me out, you'll fire me." And he said, "That's exactly what'll happen. And then, you know, your career will be, damage and whatnot." And that's when he came back that night. The meeting was called, if you recall, in his house. What to do? What next step? And that was decided to go for an open letter to Rockefeller. And he had a press conference in the Biltmore.
Oh, yeah, I remember the press conference. Had the food.
And at that press conference, by that time, the media was there.
Television, the newspapers,
and the the public letter to the governor had gone out. Because that morning, as sure as anything, he was fired. And a matter of fact, weren't they sealing the file?
Yes.
A certain hour?
That's right.
Farmer's stealing the farms.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody called me up and said, put your files in the car.
That's right. Make it more.
I said, hell with it. That's right.
Yeah, I had a feeling of terrorism.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, who was the business manager then, remember? The guy who was asked to steal all the files.
Yeah.
Thin
darkish.
I think he was still business manager when you came home.
Okay.
Yeah.
Conway?
No. Cooper.
Yeah. Right. Charlie Cooper.
Good
man.
Very good. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he was working later
back up in Albany.
Where? He went up to Albany, yeah.
Right.
He
was replaced by Maurice Foster.
Right. Yes.
Who we call Pink Slot?
You see, all you have to do is squeeze us and you'll be so long you'll find everything.
It'll all come out.
That's right. One drink will help.
I remember a meeting in the
Crow Cottage,
which was John Lee's house.
That's right.
When people were called to come.
And Harry Kalish was called and he came and rang the doorbell and asked what was going on, and when they told him, he turned around and walked away.
I remember that. I was to remind him some years later of that.
He didn't want to get involved.
No. Did you reminded Harry of that?
Yeah.
What did he say?
Well, he said he was very, very confused and upset at the time. He didn't know what was happening. And,
no, as a matter of fact, there were a few.
Some really came out as really strong as here. Arnie Feingold for one.
He was a fighter. He really was. And,
Arnie was the dean of the graduates.
Yeah, and he quit.
Did you know? You know that Arnie was our first dean of the graduates.
That's right. Well, somebody told me.
Yeah, he was the first dean. Yeah, he was first dean.
And they parked after that. Chairman of the graduate.
I think wasn't
Jordan?
This felt me.
Oh, yes, wasn't he before Dave Franks?
When I came, there was no dean of the graduate school.
No,
that's right. Arnie resigned in anger.
In anger. In protest. He terrified. He made Hamilton very upset.
Was that publicly at a faculty meeting.
Yeah, he got up and quit.
Yeah. Well, what happened earlier is that I was closeted earlier with Porter. And Porter was very apologetic that the events had to take a certain turn, and he tried to plead that he was a new guy working in the system. He had just been made provost of the system, and he didn't know what was happening. However, he was acting on Hamilton's orders, who had come down with him for that famous meeting. And
what was that meeting? Remember?
That famous faculty meeting was Pope of Intapin just was
right after.
He was fired.
About the 1st of November.
It was at the end of October, early November.
I would guess.
Yeah.
This is
60?
1960. Yeah.
All happened.
John Lee became president in about January 1960, and he was fired about the middle of October.
That's right.
It all happened that fast.
That's right.
Why was he fired?
Well,
Sidney will give you that.
I think there's got to be such a mess.
There were a couple of things. I mean, Hamilton,
first of all, was basically a weak man, and he couldn't make his own judgments as to what was going on. Secondly,
how long had he been president?
Hamilton became maybe 2 years.
Yeah, about 2 years. He was president there.
And basically,
what happened is when the Heald report got written,
John Lee took that to be the mandate for the university. And decided that was it.
He went and first tried, that was one dimension,
and there was another counterpoint theme going, and that was what was happening on campus when Olson had become dean. He brought in Al Hostel to be a student. And there was a constant undercurrent of people who did not want a university, per se. I mean, they wanted basically a college, and they wanted, as a matter of fact, there was one plan John Lee floated, if you recall, one time, to leave some people there in a four-year college setup and move the rest to the university. That was it.
And he called them into the office.
Keep a branch going in those
plans. And having, and some people from the old group said they would prefer to stay there, you know, and he thought that would be a way to solve things, but Albany said, no way. So there was only one institution, that was it.
But Lee got very frustrated because he was getting no effective response as to how they were going to implement. He wanted to know how he was going to implement this thing.
And so you remember, you and I came in with a budget, the first budget.
And Lee said, this budget, like, what? You're only asking for so much?
You got to go back and redo all your stuff.
And they were sitting up all night. And he,
in other words, he wanted to challenge them and say, okay, you want a university, we got to have
the support immediately, apparently.
And they weren't about to do it for many reasons.
The system, in spite of the Heald report,
I think the inertia that had built up, for one.
Secondly, the upstate wanted to be in the ascendancy.
Or the non-New York, let's speak.
Buffalo was not in the system yet. And
Lee got very impatient. Lee was an impatient guy, basically.
Somewhat flamboyant impatient.
And he called down...
Well, not very political.
No,
unbelievable.
I thought, you know, Aristotle's a statement
that human noun was a political one.
And I said there was always one exception, John F. Lee.
No, France is right. I mean, he...
you know, we had lots of discussions with him. Don't,
you know, attack Austell publicly, or when you get something from...
Or get in writing or something. Don't take a phone call.
Because they said to him at one meeting, get rid of Austell.
So he said, great, I'm going to get rid of him. We said, wait,
get in writing, you know, which he didn't.
You know, and he called him in and said, you know, we don't want you.
Yeah, and that triggered the students and everything.
But the interesting thing is he called in
Jim Allen. That's what got fit back then.
Yes, I remember when Allen came to the camp.
Exactly.
They were furious because when he went up and they had that letter for him to sign,
they reminded him. They said, you know,
made an end run play here. You brought Allen.
I mean, they're the public enemies, you know.
And Lee, you know, his view was, how could he be an enemy?
He's very supportive of this stuff, which was a very interesting
switch. And
it was later, after Lee was fired, that when
Allen called him, he went to his home in Albany,
and came living in those Rockefeller. That was the time Rockefeller
got the job, watching and apologized
for what happened. And said to him that he was now going to see to it that the State University was going to be a major institution. The system as a whole is going to be.
So Lee, I think, you know, put his body on the line. He was the first to...
I have never had any doubt in it.
With that whole episode, without
John Lee's bulldozing apolitical tactics, we never would have made it.
No, you're absolutely right.
Not have become the institution.
And that's an interesting case in point. I mean,
you know, here we say, well, he wasn't very political, but yet you're absolutely right.
Were he very political, it would have been drawn out.
We would never have made it.
No,
they would have, you know, really
made it. He made it drama.
That's right.
So he created a situation in which Fred Hechinger could call up and ask crucial questions and
get them in the newspaper, and
they had to be answered in a certain way, as Hamilton came down and answered.
Hamilton was scared shitless.
I called up Commissioner Allen and asked if I could see him, and he immediately said yes. Artie Kleingold and I went up and had a long interview with Allen, and I'm sure that he was gathering information. All these things made a big difference in the institution.
And later, Lee was the tummy death. Of course, Allen told him when he saw himself to that Rockefeller got all of his information was happening from Allen directly. And Allen was already very well disposed to what we had trying to do.
Yeah, I was very impressed with that.
He was very impressed. I'll never forget, I think it was Jack Lovett who used the analog of the Mets. They were just forming a team, the baseball team, the Mets. And
said, you know, we don't want to be like those Mets. You know, we want to really be champs. And we can't wait. I don't know.
Interrupt this or not. This sounds awfully good.
It would have been good if you were taking it off.
It is.
Well, he's taking
it. Oh, you are taking it.
But I think this is what we're just saying. I think it's really interesting because nobody...
It's not very widely known at all.
I mean, you say, who was the first president of Stony Brook?
Well, they don't know.
Nobody knows the name of John F. Lee, no. And the fact of his being here and that whole episode having taken place. I mean, all of us agree that was absolutely crucial.
No question.
The institution would never have become what it is without that having
been. No, it would either have been closed down,
or they would have turned to just a little college there in Oyster Bay.
Or if they brought it out here, it would have been as some of the people thought, it would be a nice little quiet college.
Yeah, exactly. And
the net result, I think, is
forced the
issue to the surface, and they have to deal with it.
It became too public, too quickly. I mean,
the governor had to deal with it. This is no less the governor.
The legislature eventually had to deal with it. And don't forget,
the legislature supported
the Hill Commission and its report.
So they couldn't suddenly say, we don't know what they're talking about.
So you had a
new alignment of political forces. And of course, Rockefeller decided to make this one of his important...
Yeah, that was his, one of his great contributions.
You see, Charles, what I'm referring was referring to about the assistance of Fred Heckinger during this whole period when John Lee is driving toward development of a major university and trying to get the resources to do it, trying to get the commitment from Albany to do it. The schism that's taking place on campus is those of us that are busy preparing for PhD programs and those that are busy preparing for small college operations. And this crucial phone call from Fred Heckinger to me, but in that conversation, I made this point. This is after John Lee was fired. And then he had a whole background piece.
Around Christmas, that was a very important piece.
And he asked, and one of the points I made was, we have to know whether we have this commitment or not, because if we're going to be a doctoral granting campus, we've got to get started right away. That means we have to start recruiting graduate students now. We have to get the word out now. There is no possibility of delay. And that's what he asked if he could contribute to me, and he did.
Mm-hmm. And the following week,
Thomas Hamilton came down to Oyster Bay
with an approval of the chemistry PhD program.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I told that story about
25th or 26th anniversary.
You were
a couple
chairman.
Of years ago?
Yeah. Well, Francis was...
Actually, with Lee,
Hamill came into this room. He had gotten
a phone call. He had read this piece.
The governor apparently had read the Heckinger piece. He had called Hamill and said,
you said that, you know, everything will become,
what the heck's going on? Because it was already after the immediate crisis.
And he came into the room and he said, and we were,
a number of us were seated around, and said, well, what headache do you people want? What assurance do you want we're going to build? You know we're going to have a university. And everyone said, well, we really don't believe it.
And he said, oh, what do I have to do
to convince you? I think you're the one who said,
well, give authorization for the PhD program.
He said, all right, what program? And you said, chemistry. I said, you have it.
The reason I
cited this is that many years later, when the state ed department decided to review all PhD programs, that they did a thorough inventory, and Dan Murray, who was in charge of all graduate programs at SUNY Central, called me one day very nervous,
and he said, I think the SUNY may have problems.
I said, what do you mean? He said, well, they've been giving PhDs in chemistry and physics for many years, but we have nothing in the files.
So I said, well, we got it from the horse's mouth.
So I said, that's the best way.
And I had to tell him the whole story. He laughed.
And of course, they found some notation from Hamilton that he had to leave this room.
That's right.
Personally. What a system.
Was Hamilton actually fired by Rockefeller?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how whether he resigned or was fired. I don't know the details, but...
He certainly was pushed out.
Yeah.
It wasn't on the front page of the Times the way John Lee's fired.
No.
No, it was quietly done. He went to Hawaii.
Yeah.
But I got here in September 62, and a week after I'd been here, Hamilton, who had appointed me, as far as I know, had replaced me. Said that he was leaving.
Yeah.
When the trustees fired John Lee, they designated Hamilton himself,
that's right,
to be the acting president of
and Harry Porter to be acting
head of arts and science.
Did they do that?
Yes, he had that some years later. That was the way
Hamilton got Porter to be here on campus. Hamilton couldn't be here, so Harry Porter in effect had that title, acting for Hamilton really in that capacity.
Yeah,
but then as Harry Porter was to say later, you know, he paid for that by getting Olsen.
Coming down before you came in, so.
And
Porter, you see, their intelligence was screwed up.
It was all messed up.
They were receiving information about the campus
from Al Norstel,
from some of these people, and they were convinced that the faculty,
as well as the students and some of the staff,
were not an anti-Lee, but
clipping where he said it.
What night?
The night when they had the big faculty meeting and all the votes went exactly opposite to what they anticipated, Hamilton and Porter.
If you recall, there were a series of resolutions.
Porter later spoke to me and said, I'm shocked. We didn't think this would happen. This is very embarrassing. So I said to him, you're not going to ask me for advice, not that you kicked me out. I said, I could have told you. I said, we were telling you this for some time. You remember those meetings we went up? And Lee was saying this message, you know, the fact that he was essentially moving in one direction and there were a few people who were not. They didn't believe it. And that's what started causing them great grief. Because they realized now they didn't have the faculty behind them. And they had to go back to the trustees, they had to go back to Allen, who was getting information, I guess, from the governor.
Allen was...
Jim Allen was Commissioner of Education.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting turn of events, because he was a commissioner who normally the state ed department wasn't so friendly with the postgrads.
Was not pro-SUNY.
No. And he was prepared to support this whole thing. As a matter of fact, Lee sold him a bill of goods when he visited us that time, to bring some of the members of the Board of Regents to some of the large state universities. You know, I remember lists were being made up. Where would they go? Minnesota, Michigan, I forget now. But there was discussion of that.
So as if there has been a conflict in point of view, and I ran into one side of it up there, and we had the other. One point of view was that of the Hill Report, that this new institution was going to be developed to stand the finest in the country.
Second to me.
And
we stand in the finest.
I recorded. I just read the report again. The other point of view was not national. It was the state, and it was relativistic in terms of equality with Albany and Binghamton and Buffalo. And they were not about to see Stony Brook become, go much farther ahead than these other three institutions.
Well, actually, the Hill Report recommended them too.
I know, that's what I'm talking about.
The Hill Report didn't recommend that Stony Brook be better than Buffalo. I mean,
No.
Recommended development of the two ends of the state.
That's true.
But the decision to bring in Albany and Binghamton was a wholly political, geopolitical decision.
As well as the whole
government for your colleges, though. Was national in its view of the future of both Stony Brook and Buffalo.
That's right.
But it mentioned Stony Brook specifically.
Because we were de novo. I mean, we were, that was part of the problem. What do you do with an institution that's just building? Where should it go? Other institutions, they already have their missions and already have their mandates pretty well worked out.
I think the Hill Commission recognized this as that it was the best chance.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think Rockefeller took this as a wonderful opportunity. He had something new to develop.
Who appointed the Hill Commission?
I think it was a legislative committee. As a matter of fact, there's a little history.
Wasn't it Carlson? Was the chancellor?
Was Carlson chancellor then?
President, really?
President.
Carlson.
Carlson. Yeah. Well, before him was Alvin Urich. 1950. Yeah. Well, right. Because I have a book which is a fascinating set of documents. Conference was held. Tom Dewey. Just by accident, I ran to this. They took the entire proceedings of this conference, put them in a book. Under the aegis of State University. Alvin Urich was head of the system, and the question that Dewey posed to Urich was, should we go back to the state legislature? See, what they were going after the war, they went back every year for enabling legislation. They did not set up illegally an entity called state. Each year they went to have money appropriated for what they called education opportunities under the banner of the state for vets returning. Dewey asked Urich, okay, should we go back again for another year, or should we instead ask for development of a state system for education? I think there were some legislators who supported whatever. So Urich called a conference, and he had some of the most eminent educators in this country called there. He had the Chancellor of Chicago, the President of Kelly. We had the president of
Teachers.
No, no, that was Coney.
Coney.
And and the interesting thing is that the general tenor of this meeting, because a lot of the people drawn were from the private sector, and a lot of them were saying, in effect, well, you did your job. You, the veterans came, you did what you had to do. Fine. If you want to keep a public system, maybe you want to have technical colleges or two, because we have fine universities in the Northeast, and you have these fine private universities at Rochester and Columbia, you know, the big one. And if anything, it was, what's his name from Chicago?
Hutchins.
Who, in the middle of this whole thing, he used the metaphor of the medieval university, you know, and it's so far apart as almost looking down his nose at the public institutions. And say, well, you can't be serious, you know, these places. They're noisy and cumbersome type things. They're not dedicated to true learning. And I also recommend that we forget about any development. I mean, we're in the Northeast, we're lucky. We're not like these primitive states out in the West. You see, they have to have. Tom Dewey at the end gave us kind of farewell talk, thanked everybody. And then sort of reminded them that he was a product of public higher education, that he had come out of University of Michigan and in effect saying, well, you know, he got pretty good education and it stood him quite well. So then he said, look, I'm looking at this not as a politician, and I look at the demographic, and the problems you had earlier are nothing compared to what you're going to face now. And I, for one, have to be responsible to citizens of this state. And I cannot see that we can terminate. He's like, if anything, I think we have to go forward with the system. So Tom Dewey already perceived that, 1950. But there was a lot of bitter infighting. I don't know if the full power was there.
On the date, the state university legislation was 48.
48. Yeah. God damn it. Yeah, but the question was, should there was a lot of debate, and I don't know where it was started, the legislature where. Should they continue?
When was your meeting, this meeting that you're describing?
These meetings were in New York City on 1950, in May, I think, of 1950.
Because you already had, you already had the Young Commission, which on the need for a state university, appointed by Dewey, and the report of that commission was 47 or early 48.
Which led to the Charter of SUNY.
Why there was some, I say, political problems that led him to ask Urich to run this huge conference. Because Urich was
50.
Almost. I should double check the date.
Yeah. Please.
I'll double check the date. Well, you know, I just thought too, what was his name? The fellow who came into the state of New York, wrote a report before the hurricane. That was it. From Minnesota, right?
Yes.
What's the name?
Blaney. He became the president of Texas, University of Texas.
Wasn't he dean? Who was the one who was dean of the graduate school from Minnesota?
Oh, yeah, he came.
And they apparently drove him out of the state because he used the Minnesota model. There should be a single.
That's the report that I remember. What was that guy's name?
Blagan. That was the Blagan report. And they apparently drove him out of the state because he spoke of a single. It's like Minnesota.
Is that what you were thinking of? Was there another one by Blaney?
I think there was another one by Blaney, and Blaney came up with the reverse and with the
Walter State campus.
Yeah. About four institutions, I think. I'm confused, but I know that that decision had to be made before the state university.
But there was a lot of dragging of the feet, you see, that even though they mandated the decision, the question was, should they go ahead?
Well, that's what the whole issue of
Of course.
The Young Commission made a report. We were there taking it seriously.
That's right.
But if they were not taking it seriously,